21. Tern watched Ulilenia and the hunter golems disappear into the red glowing darkness of the mine below. For a moment the elves and dwarves were silent, neither moving nor making the ugly noises they had made while Ulilenia had held them in thrall. Then, as one, they slowly turned back to Tern and Icy.
"I was really hoping the hunters had been controlling them," Tern muttered.
She looked back to the lock. She'd made some progress, and in another 5 or 10 minutes she would have the damn thing open. Assuming that the mind-controlled elves and dwarves gave her time to work instead of brutally hacking her to bits.
"They are not in control of themselves," Icy said, as they started to come forward, knives and hammers raised.
"Nope.
I cannot kill them, Tern."
Icy looked over at her, his face tight with anger.
"I cannot."
Tern nodded.
"I am not asking you to."
She lifted her crossbow and slid in a bolt whose head was bright red and filled with explosive powder.
"Run. I'll buy you as much time as I can."
Icy looked at her in shock.
"Tern."
"Damn it, Icy, get out of here."
Tern cranked the winch to ready her shot.
"I can maybe burn them down if I use enough fire, but I can't do it while worrying about you. You're not a killer. You can't do this."
"Tern, you helped me convince Ulilenia to spare them."
"Ulilenia wanted to kill them, Icy."
Tern raised her crossbow as the elves drew closer.
"You think I want this? I want to get through that door and save lives."
She took a few steps back.
"But in order to do that, I need these people not to hit me while I crack the lock."
She aimed, doused the head of the firebolt with the accelerant, and gritted her teeth as a finger tightened on the trigger.
"I've got no way to do that without killing them."
"I do,"
said Icy, and stepped in front of her. The first elf stabbed at him, his motions fast but mechanical. Icy checked the knife with the palm of his hand, chopped down on the elf's wrist to send the weapon skidding away, twined his body around the elf's outstretched arm, and threw the lean figure into a group of dwarves.
"Finish with the lock,"
Icy said, as he caught a hammer and twisted it from the grasp of the dwarf who'd swung it.
"Neither we nor they will die here."
He ducked under the dwarf and spun into a hip throw that sent the dwarf gently to the ground, tripping others as he rolled. Tern put her crossbow down and went back to the door, trusting that Icy was too busy not killing people to see her smile. She worked the lock carefully. It was high-grade dwarven security, augmented by newer crystal enchantments that had to have come from the ancients. She bypassed the primary failsafes by convincing the lock it was already open, which was great, except for how it made the lock not want to then actually open, and she had to get around that by manually working the tumblers with enough force to overcome the dead state magnets without snapping anything critical in the process. It took her closer to 10 minutes than 5, and as she worked, bodies hit the ground behind her. Finally, the door chimed, clicked and slid open, and Tern lowered her cramping hands and looked back. Icy dodged a stab, caught it at the last moment to stop it from hitting another elf, twisted the knife away, swept both elves' legs out from under them with a single circling kick, and came back to his feet, sweaty but smiling.
"Nicely done," he said.
There was a great pile of bodies around him, elves and dwarves prone and tangled, amid a field of fallen knives and hammers and picks. Tern saw not a single drop of blood.
"Same to you, Icy,"
she said, smiling as she picked up her crossbow. Icy ducked below a stab from behind without looking, reached between his own legs, and grabbed the leg of the elf who had tried to skewer him. He stood up, still holding the leg, and then let go. The elf hit the ground with a thud. He was looking at Tern's crossbow.
"You had the safety on."
"Oops."
Tern let him see the smile this time.
"Come on, let's go find out what the bad guys are doing and screw up their plans."
They walked into the processing center, and Icy shut the door behind them as Tern looked. She'd only caught a glimpse of it last time, but it looked like the damage had been repaired and everything was back in full swing. Moving belts funneled crystals from one great machine to the next, polishing away imperfections and honing their natural magic into the precise power that the ancients required. There were no golems in the room any longer. The entire space had been automated, with little hooks and claws sorting crystals and plucking defective ones away with perfect precision.
"You are never going to kill them," Icy said with an accusatory look.
"I don't like killing people," Tern said.
Icy glared.
Why did you not simply suggest that I disable them without killing them, then?
Because you swore an oath. Tern met his look. I don't ask my friends to break their oaths. Icy smiled.
You merely help them discover ways to twist the letter in order to keep the spirit.
I'm a giver. Tern walked past a row of moving belts. Now, the Lepitemporum schematics said that there was a room back here where...
A door at the far end of the room swung open, and Westyke stepped out. He was clad in crystal, all of it smoky grey, save the paladin band on his right forearm.
I am the overseer, Westyke said. You will pay for any injury done to my slaves.
Might want to add a charge for fire damage, Tern said, bringing up her crossbow and firing in one smooth motion.
The firebolt that was still loaded sipped out and caught Westyke square in the chest with an explosion of yellow and orange flame.
See, him I don't even feel remotely bad about killing. That guy was a pimple on the ass of Hugh.
She broke off as Westyke walked through the flames, his grey crystalline armour pristine.
Okay, so about your oath, Tern said,
and loaded another bolt. Kale got up the ladder fast, hit the top, dove outside, spun to the side of the panel, waited until the footsteps on the ladder ended, and then slammed the panel shut on the head of Mr. Slant. At least that had been the plan, and in a world with any kind of fairness, Slant would have been unconscious on the ground right then. Instead, Slant caught the panel and kicked it back into Kale, who caught it on the forearms, stumbled, and then dove back behind the panel as the paladin raised his arm. The crimson blast of energy ripped past Kale, and Slant kicked the panel again, and this time Kale ended up on his butt. Slant took his expensive coat off, folded it, and set it down gently.
Benjamin de Quail, I cannot tell you how pleased I am to finally meet you, face to face.
He rolled out his shoulders as Kale got up. Kale raised his fists.
I go by Kale. It's shorter, easier for your mother to shout over and over again.
Mr. Slant laughed through big, shiny white teeth.
I go by Slant, ever since I left your mother, walking crooked.
Kale went in hard. Slant took the first punch with a boxer's guard, ducked under the right hook, and slammed an uppercut into Kale's stomach.
Our greatest warriors say that our attack shows our weakness, Mr. Slant said,
still smiling as he slammed Kale into the great golden wall of the font.
You know, you are famous for your cracks about people's mothers.
Speaking of mothers and cracks, Kale said, kicking out with a cheap shot that caught Slant in the gut.
You should really tell yours to.
His great line was cut off by a backhand that clipped his face and sent him staggering back.
It's a good gimmick, Mr. Kale, Slant said, but it shows your own weakness. You hit people where hitting you would hurt the most.
He came in with a shot Kale dodged, and then a roundhouse kick that Kale tried to block and really just absorbed instead, taking the blow with enough force to slam him into the wall of the font.
You have a fast mouth, and there's one liar to another. I respect that deeply.
He kicked again, and again Kale tried to block it and crashed hard into the wall.
But when I talk, the entire Republic listens.
He kicked again, and Kale jumped up and grabbed the top of the font as Slant's kick smashed into the wall below him. Slant snarled and leaped, and Kale pulled himself up. Slant's fist struck the golden wall and rang it like a gong.
Your mother doesn't talk this much, Kale shouted,
pushing himself to his knees on the top of the font, which was a few feet wide, with a giant fountain of crimson fire blazing right there past the inner lip.
Of course, usually her mouth is for...
He ducked down as a blast of crimson energy ripped past him, nearly falling into the damn fire, and as he regained his balance, Slant pulled himself up.
Your problem, Mr. Kale, is that you're not actually a very good fighter, Slant said, still smiling. Sure, you destroyed an airfield the last time I did something to your mother, but most of that was anger and trickery. Your mother loves my tricks, Kale muttered, and snapped out a low kick.
Slant knocked it down with contemptuous ease, and before Kale could recover, lashed out with a jab that rocked the scout's head back.
Your mother this, your mother that, Slant said,
as Kale staggered, one sleeve brushing the wall of fire on his right with a quick flash of pain.
You can't take it, Mr. Kale.
He chuckled.
Not like your mother can, anyway.
Kale lunged in with a cry of rage, and Slant caught the punch, locked Kale's left arm at the elbow, and shoved him face first toward the wall of fire.
"Leave my mother alone!" Kale yelled, pulling back as hard as he could.
The crimson fire was a searing heat against his flesh, and he smelled burning leather and hair as he struggled.
"Do you know what I'm going to do to her?" Slant asked, his grip steady. "You'll be dead, but I want you to know that I'm completely serious here. I wouldn't lie about this. I'm going to kill you, and I'm going to spread the story of your death. And in my story, the story every puppet show tells, the only story everybody will ever hear, it's going to be her fault."
He pushed Kale a little closer to the fire.
"The piece of trash mother who raised a piece of trash son. Poor boy is responsible for his choices, sure. But what chance did he really have with a useless drunk whore like her bringing him up?"
Kale's skin was screaming from the heat of his clothes.
"They'll never believe you. She'll tell them the truth." Slant laughed. "Seeing is believing, Mr. Kale. I doubt your mother is going to have much of a counter-argument. Not when every puppet show is a glamour screen showing you attacking a nice white man like a vicious brute."
His grip on Kale's arm tightened.
"Pod 2, come in close for the finale."
"Thanks," Kale said, and twisted the arm Slant held in the joint lock. There was a sickening, snapping crunch as Kale's left arm slid out of the hold, but Kale's right arm was going into his pocket even as he spun. He came out holding the crystal he'd taken from the console down in the control room. It glowed with steady magic, and Slant looked at it blankly as Kale scanned the sky.
"What the hell are you going to do with that useless little thing?" Slant asked.
Kale smiled as he saw the little glowing orb just a few yards away, and he gave Slant one last look.
"That's what your mother said."
He threw the crystal and dove down from the top of the font. The crystal hit the orb cleanly, and there was a tiny pop, followed by a massive blinding flare of light and a burst of force that buffeted Kale as he hit the ground, ruining his landing and making him jolt his broken arm as he fell back into the wall again. But he looked up anyway, because the agonizing pain he was feeling at that moment was completely worth it, as he watched Mr. Slant stagger back, hit the fire, and go up like a candle as he fell into the crimson flame. Kale made sure that the man didn't walk out of the fire or anything magical like that. Then he sat back against the wall.
"Talking about my mum," he muttered,
and waited to see whether the pain in his arm was going to make him vomit. Desidora let death come over her again as she faced Smith Lively, who still rode Pyvik's body.
"Bring the boy back," she said.
Smith Lively smiled. Desidora recognized the smile. She had felt it stretched across her face, a mirthless observation of a tiny thing that did not realize she held its life in the palm of her hand. His skin went pale, and his hair darkened to black. The simple brown riding leathers Pyvik had worn darkened to jet black, while the studs brightened to silver. Superfluous belts grew around the arm and waist.
"You're weak, sister," he said, "pleading for his life."
"I was pleading for yours," she said, and wrenched at his soul.
Her magic glanced off wards that shone with a polish of well-forged steel. Smith Lively shook his head.
"Why the single zombie trap, sister? Why allow you to come to the temple? Why guard your back while you slowly, fumblingly, groped your way through the wards around the zombies here?"
"You made a mistake," Desidora said, and struck the air as though her magic were a hammer. "You will not live to repeat it."
Again, her magic glanced off Lively harmlessly.
"I suspected I could kill you with the element of surprise," he said, as the floor around him went black and cold. "But a good craftsman measures twice and cuts once. I waited, and I watched."
The pews sprouted little silver gargoyles whose skulls screamed silently.
"I have seen how your magic works."
"I've cracked your wards twice," Desidora said, and lashed out again, her fingers curled like talons.
Something in the magic caught, like fingernails clawing down a bedsheet as her magic slid down his wards. Lively snared.
"Love, priestess. He raised a fist, and his magic slammed into her aura and smashed her to the ground.
I've no doubt your little sex auras could seduce your way through my armor.
As Desidora struggled back to her feet, he gestured again, and his power blasted her through three pews in an explosion of bent metal and splinters.
But good steel slams right through bedsheets.
Desidora's aura of death made her harder to hurt, but as she rolled over, shoving splinters and black iron aside, a drop of red blood stained the ground in front of her. She had never met another death priest. Beyond the terrible histories, her only guidance had been Tashaveth herself, warning her of how terrible the power of death could be, if wielded by one who followed a god who preferred violence to love. That conversation with her goddess had helped her regain her power. She had thought at the time that had been its only purpose.
"Thank you," she whispered.
"What's that?" Lively asked,
his toothy smile diamonds on white satin.
"I said thank you."
Desidora got up.
"For so long I hated what I was. I thought I was a monster."
"Your priests are weak," Lively said. "What was it my boy said? Animals don't worship the gods. You things are a bare step better. This power granted by the gods for their purpose. Let me wrench apart reality itself to build the gate to the Shadowlands. You tremble at your power like a blushing virgin, for all that you worship the goddess of whores."
"Used to," Desidora agreed. "But now I've met you, and I see why I was chosen. I see that for all the darkness I found within me, all the cruel magic I've unleashed, I am still me. I am still a love priestess.
And you are still a thug." "A thug with a hammer," Lively said, snarling, and brought his fist up again.
Then he blinked as Desidora flickered and dwindled before his eyes, and when he brought his magic down, it did not smash against where she had been, but sank in slowly, with a muffled impact.
"A hammer, yes."
Desidora let the cloak slip away from her, and Lively spun, realizing that she had stepped several yards away from her earlier position.
"And all I have are bedsheets. Funny thing about bedsheets, though. A man who never learns subtlety might have a hard time finding a woman in them."
She pulled the cloak of her power around her again, and stepped aside as his magic crashed down. The force was unstoppable, but she wasn't trying to stop it anymore, just letting it slide by her and making herself easy to miss. He glared and looked around, trying to track her. She kept her footsteps light and quiet as she circled him, and then let the cloak slip.
"You can't really have bed sheets without the mattress, can you, Smith Lively?"
he spun.
"So I suppose I have the mattress too. And the funny thing about a good mattress, and as you so crudely implied, I've known a few, you can swing a hammer at one all day without doing a damned bit of harm."
His magic crashed down and then slid away, muffled and useless, as she brought up her power.